France or Croatia. The World Cup final is down to two teams. I am joined, me being Shahan Ahmed, joined by Joseph Galino.
Hey guys, what's up?
And Alex Baker.
Football is not coming home.
Fortunately.
Football team already came home.
Yes.
Football's coming in third if it's lucky.
We are here to talk about the World Cup final, since that's really all that matters. But really, let's be honest, we're going to talk about the third and fourth place team or game or whatever you want to call it, because that is really what the people care about. We're joking, obviously. So let's start first and foremost with, let's start with France. It's been an interesting tournament for Les Bleus. Joey, I want to start with you. Has France been as good as a team that should be in the final, and not just a team in the final, but the like heavy favorite to win the final?
Here's what's interesting. No, I frankly don't think so.
Frankly.
I don't think that they've gotten out of like, nice. I don't think that they've gotten out of like, what, B gear all tournament? But they're still here, and they're still here rather comfortably. It's not that they haven't been challenged here and there, but how talented is this team that they can do what we talked about on podcasts before and leave behind a team of players that could probably reach the World Cup quarterfinals with how good it is and still bring this team to Russia and do what they've done? You know, but the other thing is, like, part of you wants to be like, okay, yes, soccer is supposed to be the beautiful game. It's supposed to be it's the ultimate, as far as I'm concerned, canvas, if you will, for sports, because other sports have such regimented rules and things like that. Soccer is the most impressionistic. It's the most organic. It's the most original game that we have. And for them to put their style and their impact and their trademark on each match the way they have hasn't been overly impressive where it has been with other World Cup finals to the past. But you know what? It doesn't matter. They're in the final. And they're in the final having not played ugly soccer by any stretch of the imagination. I know some people are accusing Didier Deschamps, the manager, of playing a more conservative style. But you know what? If you want to win a World Cup, you have to do it like this. This is how it's happened. Like this, it's not pretty when you get to the latter stages, and he's been effective. And so now on Sunday, I feel like you can kind of turn things loose, and I wouldn't be surprised to see an incredible performance out of the French. So,
Alex, why do you think France has made the final?
They've been the best team in the World Cup. I mean, there's no obligation for how you're supposed to play.
Yes, they that's the key to, word, obligation.
They don't have to play to entertain us. We would like them to. I even heard Julien Laurent the other day on the radio saying how he actually disagreed with you and felt like that Belgium maybe had a right to some of those criticisms about them parking the bus. But you know what? It's Deschamps' team. He can use it how he wants to. He can set it up how he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
They've won their games, and they've been the better team in those games. It's not that fun. It's not really spectacular, and it could be because of the players we have, but you know, I was impressed at the way that they let Belgium have possession and yet limited their chances and took their goal and got out with the win that they needed. I think they've been the best team. Maybe they're not the ones that we get excited about, but they have been the best team. They're right where they should be.
You know, I'm trying to think, and I think you're right. It's weird to say that.
It's really hard for you to say that.
Well, only because when I think about it, you know, they haven't been that good.
They haven't.
They only got into the final because of a Samuel Umtiti header near post. And not only because, obviously, they shut down Belgium and did a darn good job. Hugo Lloris has probably been their best player, if you really think about it. And it's odd because you'd say he's been the best player, but he's probably not been the best goalkeeper in the World Cup. He's been close, but I'm not sure he necessarily gets the golden gloves when it's all said and done. It's so tough because Thibaut Courtois, I would probably say, had a better overall performance in the World Cup.
I agree.
And it's close, obviously. But it's strange to say that France has been the best team and their best player is not necessarily even been the best player in his position. So, and it's not like Belgium, you know, was a bad team this World Cup. But France was better. They deserve to go through when you kind of take a step back and look at how that all played out. And on the other side, you know, Croatia was the best team in the group stages, but they weren't necessarily all that great in the knockout rounds. But they've done enough to get through. So
yeah, they remind me of a slightly more successful version of the Netherlands in the last World Cup, where they started off like a house on fire, had a couple really, really impressive performances early on, and then basically just ran out of steam. You know, the Netherlands got the two penalty shootouts, one against Croatia, one out against Argentina. That could have gone either way. They could have been in the final. Croatia had just sort of done one better on the penalty. They did impress me against England the way they actually were able to pull those energy reserves to win that game. But
I can't believe you brought the Netherlands into this. Joey, what do you make of Croatia's chances, and why should we give them a chance?
Well, I think
should we give them a chance?
I think we should, and I think that it goes back to something I touched on earlier. You know, like I'm frankly sort of struggling beside France 98 and Korea Japan 2002 in those finals for thinking of a final that wasn't just down to the wire and like was decided by the finest of margins. You know, you had, I think it was either a penalty shootout or a 1-0 for West Germany over Argentina in 1990. And then in 94, it was obviously a shootout at the Rose Bowl. Alex, you like to say Roberto Baggio's ball still hasn't come down from that penalty that he missed. But then in 06, it was obviously a penalty shootout. And frankly, if Zidane doesn't, you know, headbutt Materazzi, maybe we're talking about a different outcome.
That's not true. Okay, I've been over this before, and I'll go over it again.
Go ahead.
Zidane.
I had to trigger him.
Yeah.
I did.
So the missed penalty kick came from Frank Ribery's substitution, David Trezeguet. Everybody else made their penalty kicks. Thierry Henry actually went off an extra time as well, and Wiltord came in and made his penalty kick. So Zidane, regardless, would have probably been the fifth penalty taker who never even got to take a penalty kick because Italy made all their penalties.
Right.
And Trezeguet would have still taken that penalty and still missed it. So as much as you want to blame Zidane, that's not why they lost the World Cup.
Well, I think they might have scored, though, because their collection of pressure at that point in time was actually much greater than
Italy. Well, he almost did score. His last action was a header that Buffon nearly...
Yes.
Like it was an incredible save.
That's not the point. Okay, I'm sorry. I brought that up. That's not the point.
Just don't blame Zizou, okay?
I won't blame Zizou. I will not.
You got me bringing up the Netherlands. You got Joey bringing up the 2006 World Cup.
2010, all right? Wow. That game is decided in the 116th minute.
Who was in that game? The Netherlands.
Okay, now we're just off the rails. 2014, who decided that game? That was Mario Götze in, what, the 113th minute? When you win the World Cup, you don't win it pretty. You win it ugly. And again, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with France. Like, they haven't looked fantastic, or they at least haven't looked up to their peak. But you don't have to win a tournament like this. That's what's found in evidence, at least in our cognizant lifetimes, at the World Cup. So when people say, like, Croatia had to go to extra time and penalties and all these times and whatever, and, you know, you're right, there's a point to be made about how that taxes you and how your training staff really has to be on point for the recovery and everything like that, because you're playing these long matches the whole way through and you're probably in for another big battle against France on Sunday. But that's how teams win the World Cup. So when people want to say, like, Croatia is ugly or whatever, which we've seen in the media, we've seen among fans, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have no chance. I think they have a really good chance because I think their midfield's really good. I think that their defense has been better than expected. I think Mandzukic obviously might have a goal in him. So there's a puncher's chance there. I wouldn't pick them necessarily, but to say that, like, France is going to walk over them, which you guys aren't, I'm just saying, like, that notion, I think, is utterly absurd.
Yeah, so you know, analytically, when I look at this match, I think it's going to come down to the midfield, obviously, for both sides. And you look at Conte and what he can do against Modric, because Modric and Rakitic both have just been immense this entire World Cup. And they, you know, I was watching the match back last night as I passed out on my couch, and you could, even in those first, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, the semifinal match, I'm talking about Croatia England. Croatia was definitely rattled after letting that early goal in and Trippier hitting that wonderful free kick. You would see them misplaced passes and things that you wouldn't normally, you know, equate with Croatia and the quality of midfield that they have. However, Modric was still pinging balls across the field that are like 30-yard balls that were essentially, you know, he's playing on the right side of that central midfield and Rakitic is more on the left side, and he was hitting those balls cross field to Perisic, and Perisic was able to take it down and cut in and do everything he needs to do. That's when they were actually rattled. So, like, I do not discount them based on that midfield. And I know England had plenty of chances in that first half to put the match away. They could have put it away if Harry Kane scores that goal,
oh my goodness,
frankly.
Yeah.
But that said, that entire second half and extra time, Croatia was the better team. They were controlling the midfield entirely. So when I look at it, I say with Brozovic, you know, playing well, Rakitic, Modric, Perisic, and Rebic, you really do have five guys that are able to control it. Where I worry about them is Kylian Mbappe, coming down on that defense. Because in that first half, when Sterling was, you know, getting some of those runs in, he was causing trouble, and there probably should have been a yellow card on Lovren at some point, pretty early, frankly. but I have a feeling that Mbappe is not only is he a better finisher than Sterling, but the way that he runs at defenses and having more quality like Griezmann there and possibly, you know, Harry Kane is possibly injured, but Giroud, the workmanship that he provides, I think that that is where I have a tough time saying that France will not come out ahead. And on the opposite side of that, you know, you look at England's defense was incredible because of the pace of Kyle Walker, in my opinion. You know, Stones was a good player. Everybody in that back line was solid, but Kyle Walker just erased so many mistakes. And his pace, anytime they tried to put anybody tried to pull a ball ahead, he would just zoom on by and make sure that ball didn't get through. Now you look at France, and Umtiti and Varane are both amazing defenders. Like, the quality that you're facing on the other side is so tough to overcome. So when I try and figure out where that goal is going to come from Croatia, I have a real tough time trying to find the spaces. You know, Conte and Modric is the easy matchup that you would say that's what you kind of have to keep an eye on. But when I think about it, it's like that Mbappe against the back line, him rushing at defenders, I think that's going to be the edge.
And I think, yeah, just real quick, Alex, before you jump back in, perhaps the thing we haven't talked about the most that we should have been this entire tournament, and I mean we as a collective soccer populace, what was the narrative on France? Like, for even going back to Euros a couple of years ago, they had really talented attackers. We know that, individually especially. Their midfield was the envy of the planet. Lloris is a fantastic keeper, even if he's not going to win the Golden Gloves award for this tournament. It was the defense. And no one said it was bad, but they said, well, you know, maybe it was the clear weak link of the team. Varane and Umtiti from the center spots have led and anchored such a compact and solid back line that it's been surprising. And I don't say that to disrespect their talent. And obviously they play for Real Madrid and Barcelona. So they're clearly two of the best at what they do. But I think that has been a pleasant surprise if you're a French fan, how well that they've defended this entire tournament.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they gave up a goal against Australia. I guess they gave up three against Argentina. I forgot about that. But
one of them was also kind of late. So
yeah, but I'd like to make. I think Croatia has a chance. I don't think anyone thinks this game is going to be a walkover.
Right.
I don't think that. I think most people realize this Croatia team is there because they're probably the second best team in the World Cup. And maybe you could argue maybe Belgium, you know, deserved to be there too, but they just wound up in the wrong bracket. Otherwise, they probably would have been.
Should have finished second in their group. We talked
should
about
have done
that.
It. Should have done it.
Well, I mean, you can do the what ifs all you want.
Yeah. For sure,
I mean,
for sure.
If you even in Belgium, Brazil, if the referees are using VAR properly, that game probably gets extended. And the way Belgium looked in that second half, you probably take Brazil to go through. But these are the teams we got, and when you look at them, you probably say, "Yeah, Croatia deserves to be there. France deserves to be there." You can't take anything away from either side.
No. I'm just trying to find, like you, how does Croatia? What happens that allows? How could Croatia win this? Like, let's say they frustrate France. Let's say they get their possession going, they sort of slow the game down, they put France on the ropes a little bit, and France gets frustrated. It gets to 90 minutes, they don't have a goal, or it's tied or something. Does France start to lose?
Right.
Could this team? Here's the thing with France: we still haven't seen them tested. I don't think we saw them tested against Belgium. Even I just don't really know what happens when this team gets a little bit out of its comfort zone.
And I know this
and Croatia might be able to put them there, and that's when they might be able to sort of pop up with the goal as they did against England when the game gets into a rhythm and then suddenly there's Mandzukic.
Right.
You know?
And this isn't a like for like because it obviously happened two summers ago now. And there's going to be, you know, five or six guys who are in that 11 who are different from what it was in the Euro 2016 final. But, man, you lost to Portugal without Ronaldo after 25 minutes.
Yeah, they were supposed to win that
on
game.
Home soil in a major tournament final, which would have been your first major tournament championships in once, Euro 2000, I think. Yep. So, you know, and like a lot of people are saying that is like, oh, that's going to be something that informs them going into this match. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. But at what point does that sort of flip? If this is a scoreless game after 70 minutes, maybe 60 minutes, maybe the hour mark, what point does France start to think like,
it's
happening again? This is happening again.
Yeah. Like, no, it's, and you know, we spoke, I think, a couple of
podcasts. I like it. I'm here for it.
A couple of podcasts ago, I was talking about how I just had a feeling that that defeat had provided enough motivation for this group to really get over it.
I agree with that. I think, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, and I think that's why, that's one of the reasons why I have a tough time picking against France. As much as I respect Croatia and really do understand the quality that they have, the one area I would say, okay, so we talked about the back line and the center of the back line in particular. And then on the left side, Lucas Hernandez has been awesome.
Been amazing.
He's been incredible. And on the right side, Pavard had that incredible goal, but you would say he is the weakest link in that starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So Rebic is probably going to be the person who ends up going at him, and he's been pretty damn good
guy in this World Cup, real quick, who might earn like a new contract at club level with like a major club, it might be him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been talking about Serie A being very well represented.
It is.
With Brozovic and Mandzukic and Perisic. And Brozovic and Perisic are actually club teammates, too, at Inter, who has had a member in the World Cup final going back to, I believe, I want to say 1982.
They've had a World Cup finalist.
Interesting.
It is. Wow. Yeah, 1982. They've had at least one World Cup finalist since 1982.
Is there any other club that can?
I can't imagine who, but like
nothing off the top of my head.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty ridiculous stat for a club. There is that club connection when you think about Croatia. I'm not saying that Pavard is a bad player by any means. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be there. I'm just saying if you're Croatia and you're looking at where to attack, I mean, Varane and Umtiti are real tough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
Hernandez has been incredible, and you know at club level he's good too. It's not an anomaly. Pavard has been kind of a new face, so to speak. So
yeah.
I think you have to kind of try and go that way. But in my mind, the way that they're going to do it is set pieces is been kind of the theme of this World Cup.
Yes.
And I think that if you're Croatia, you try and get in a spot where Luka Modric can put in a ball, and you hope that you probably don't have the height advantage, but you hope that your routine works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all it comes down to. That's your best hope.
Set pieces, ugly goals, like, you know, the tactics can be broken down into like several different ways. But again, this is about winning however you have to. If it's maybe Croatia goes out there and puts on a dominant midfield performance, wins 3-1, 3-0, something like that, and we're all just sitting here fawning about them next week. It's probably not going to be like that, though. And, you know, we've been talking about how great Lloris has been, and obviously he gave up the 3 goals against Argentina, but look at the attackers they have. Like, good Lord. He didn't give up one. He didn't give up a single one against Belgium. Didn't give up a single one against Uruguay, although, to be fair, Enzo Cavani was out that match. So France and Conte in front of the defense and the defense itself and Lloris have been fantastic.
And the Di Maria goal was pretty ridiculous.
It was. It was amazing. If you sneak one past Lloris at the 20-minute mark, how does that change things? Like, how does France, like Alex, you've been saying, like, has France really been tested? And I don't necessarily like that idiom in sports because it's like, well, of course they've been tested. This is the World Cup. They've played 6 like high pressure matches.
I mean, they looked wobbly. Australia.
They've
wobbly.
Looked wobbly.
Yeah, they did not look good against Australia.
So it's kind of about a degree of test, you know. If you go down 1-0 after 25 minutes or something, how do you respond? I mean, because Lloris has been amazing, but he's also kind of been like he's been their Teflon Don, so to speak. He's been the unbeatable guy the last couple rounds. And if you see, as a French player, a goal go past him early in the match, what does that do for your confidence? Like, yeah. And this is what, you know, we all agree France is the favorite. We all probably are picking them to win. But, man, there are avenues for Croatia to win this game. And
but,
I think that
but
that's
maybe
the
that's,
key point.
Because we keep talking about how, you know, France has played the World Cup in third gear. Like, maybe that's what it takes to get them to go. Like, if they do go a goal down, if Croatia does put them up, then maybe we'll actually see what I think.
We'll see them.
We saw a little bit of it against Argentina because they had to. They had to play. They had to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wanted this team to arrive in Russia and to just be like the Harlem Globetrotters and being outscoring teams and see, like, all these great flair players combining. We haven't really got to see it. So if Croatia can push them into having to do that, then I don't think anyone can beat them.
I mean, when you think about it,
if they stay in their shell, it could get tricky.
Well, I think both teams are going to come out pretty cautious. But when we think about that match, you know, the one you're talking about when they did have the flair against Argentina, it was Mbappe, man. He took apart a a defense that had some
that
holes in it.
Run.
And like he earned
that
a pen. He earned
that, that run with the ball where he was faster than everyone else without it. Like
He earned that first penalty.
Yep.
That was, I thought, the most impressive of those goals, because that was before they took Rojo off, and after they took Rojo off, it was a mess. That was a substitution that cost Argentina the match, in my opinion. But they weren't the better team anyway. But the way that that was Mbappe's best game by far in this tournament, in my opinion, and I think in general, I think most people would agree with that. That is exactly what France needs, because when you think about it, Griezmann hasn't been that great. Giroud hasn't been that great. They're not really getting their goal production. Pogba hasn't been that great. There are a lot of players that have been like B-minus players this World Cup. Mbappe has been their A-plus player. And if he actually comes out, that's why I keep saying that's the player where I say that's the one matchup where you just look at it and go, wherever he is, wherever he's running, that he is going to be the game changer that I just don't know how I see Croatia coping with him.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. How does Croatia cope with Mbappe's pace? Because Argentina couldn't.
Who can? I mean,
who can?
This is, you know, with Ronaldo now departed to Juventus, if there's one person who's putting on an audition to Real Madrid, for example, saying, I should be the person you pursue, not necessarily Neymar or somebody else like that, Mbappe has been fantastic. He's 19.
Yeah, right? he Mbappe is pretty much like, oh, you have an open number 7 shirt at Real Madrid?
Guess what?
The guy whose posters I used to have on my wall is the number 7 for Real Madrid? Yeah, I'm his replacement.
Yes.
I mean, if you're Real Madrid, who do you want? If you could have him either one.
Oh, I would take Mbappe.
I'd take Mbappe all day.
For what they need and what they want and the age that he's at, that he is built to play at Real Madrid. Now, if you get Neymar, there's even that little Real Barcelona thing mixed in already. Mbappe, who grew up a huge Cristiano Ronaldo fan with posters of him at Real Madrid on his wall, those pictures exist.
Wow.
I've seen them.
Right? No, I know.
And
I know.
It is completely insane. But you look at it and just if from a marketing sense and on the field sense, why would you not take Mbappe?
You take Mbappe. Yeah.
And I hate to do this because he's my favorite player of all time, but people who say like Mbappe is Thierry Henry, like he's some kind of like next generation Thierry Henry. I don't want to say this out loud.
You're recording this. This is being recorded.
I think he's better.
You know what would back that up, Joey, is that when you think about France 98, Henry was, I believe, 20 years old and was on the team. He didn't play. He wasn't subbed on in the final. He wasn't anything.
No.
Mbappe is the central. We're saying like he is the most important player for France to win. He has the ability to go well beyond, you know, the comparison of Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, to Mbappe has been made many, many times. I have a tough time saying that about anybody at this point, but his ability and what he's been able to do, he has the ability to be the most dynamic, powerful, offensive player that we've ever seen, period. Mm-hmm. And to be doing this at this age, on this level, if he comes out and wins the World Cup final and it's on him, I mean, I have a tough time saying there's anybody who's been better this World Cup. And really, in my mind, the golden ball is going to go between Luka Modric if Croatia wins and Kylian Mbappe if France wins. And Modric could still get it in a defeat if he plays his part and Mbappe has kind of an anonymous performance, which we would all forgive him for. He's 19 years old.
Seriously.
But if Mbappe shows out, how do you not just give him the golden ball? And at 19 years old, you're not the young player of the World Cup. You are the player of the World Cup.
Funny would it be if the young player was like a year or two older than the golden ball winner?
I mean, that we are genuinely like we're in a spot where is there even any competition for young player of the World Cup? There's nobody.
No.
It's a matter of whether or not he's just going to clean sweep at this point. So
yeah, I think a lot of it hinges on the final. But at this point, I'm leaning towards Modric just because I feel like you look at what he's done with the players around him, you know, compared to what Mbappe's had to work with. Modric has just been lights out, amazing.
Yeah, he's been. I was calling when the round of 16 draw came out, and I tweeted this out too, but I believe I said it on the podcast. I was saying Croatia to make the final with Modric winning the golden ball is a damn good shout and a damn good bet. And if I lived in a place where I was allowed to bet, I genuinely like considered calling up my brother in England and telling him to go put some money on Croatia to make the final. Because
hit up Ladbrokes.
Yeah, I was like,
party power.
I was just thinking that they would knock off Spain, but once Russia did it, then I was like, this is just a walk in the park.
Just Spain is still in timeout as far as I'm concerned. They're in their room and they're not getting supper as far as I'm concerned.
So I'm going to have you guys just go through and add in one more tidbit on whatever you want to talk about, whether it's the final or the lead up to the final. But anything that you think we haven't touched on that should be included when you're kind of watching this match, something to watch, something to keep an eye on, something that you're kind of interested in for this last final.
I'll go with N'Golo Kanté. And I think that we touched on him briefly during the podcast so far, but he is he's kind of like the Casemiro of France, if you will, like what Casemiro is for Real Madrid and Brazil to a certain extent.
And he was suspended for the match they lost.
Yes. That shield in front of the defense is just so important. And he's arguably the best ball winner on the planet. And he's 5'5", so it's kind of amazing that he's that good at it. But he's a great sure-footed tackler.
His calves are amazing. If you haven't checked them out, just Google Kanté's calves.
Yeah, Kanté's calves, like it's ridiculous. And that kind of clues you in on how his work rate can be so high. And whenever you win a championship like this, whenever you win like a major tournament like this, it's always down to some level of like hard work. And I hate that term because it's like the most cliched thing in sports, but it's really true with this kind of competition, with this, you know, level of play. And I think Kanté exemplifies that. You know, we might see Antoine Griezmann hit a couple free kicks or Mbappe, like we were talking about, score a couple really nice goals, or maybe, you know, Varane has a couple vital interceptions in the back third. But Kanté's work rate in the middle of the field is going to be absolutely it's going to be absolutely vital if France wants to win the World Cup. And him and Modric, like, and him kind of just basically denying the clear strength of Croatia in their midfield with Perisic and Rakitic and Modric is going to be ultimately critical. And I think that, you know, that can't be stressed enough.
Also, Kanté riding a bike, worth Googling.
I have to check that one out. Six matches for Croatia in this World Cup. All the matches they've played in their away sort of gray Czech jersey. So we haven't had a chance to see the red and white
the
classic.
Glory
the fighting the bistro tablecloth jersey that we all love so much. But here's my question. Knowing how superstitious athletes and soccer players can be, because you played six games wearing this sort of gray alternate kit, do you stick with it? Or do they say, well, France is wearing blue, you can wear your kit? Or do you go with the... I mean, you're in a World Cup final. I suppose you want to wear the iconic red and white, don't you?
Who's away? Is France away? I forget.
Jersey? France will be the home team. Let's see if they wear them. They're going to be the away team. France is going to be wearing blue. I think they can get away with wearing the red and whites if FIFA will allow. Does that violate protocol, or is it just...
There's something weird about Allez les Blancs as opposed to Allez les Bleus. We'll say that.
Yeah. Well... Yeah. For me, I don't think there's really all that much. I've already spoken too much about both these teams. I just really only care about the third place match. That's really all I'm looking forward to. Which, honestly, if Belgium and England both put their first teams forward, which they should. I know there's been a lot of like, oh, this is a reserve match. They should put them because we've had some incredible third place matches.
Thank you.
When you think back to, 2010 when Diego Forlan and Uruguay had that incredible third place match, it was a fun time. And to go back to your Netherlands thing, yes, as much as since we're talking about the 2010 World Cup real quick, that ball that Wesley Sneijder played to Arjen Robben, that decided that match well long before Andres Iniesta came on to score that, because that would have been regulation time, and the fact that Robben missed that still to this day. And we could say the same about Gonzalo Higuain in 2014, or even Lionel Messi.
What year with Higuain?
Or even Lionel Messi. He had a chance in that 2014 final that people always look over, like gloss over, and just focus on Higuain's miss. All that said.
And also the Inter Milan guy with the rat tail. He had a couple chances.
Palacio. He was in the World Cup final. Another Inter player in the World Cup final.
Was he the only rat tail player ever to feature in a World Cup final?
We'd have to check the tape from like 86, 90, and 94. But maybe.
It's been a while. I'm looking in all seriousness, I'm really looking forward to this final, and I do expect it to be a close match. I think France has the talent, no doubt, but I do think that the semifinal really did gear France to facing a robust midfield. And I think it's gonna be a similar match to the semifinal that we saw against Belgium, is what I'm expecting. With the one caveat that I think Belgium had a significantly better defense than than Dejan Lovren and company. Mm-hmm. And I know he loves Vida. I think is a much better player than Lovren, if you ask me. But you know, don't if you ask Lovren, that's not how he feels. He's been very overly confident. And you know what? There's a very strong shout for him to potentially lose the Champions League final and the World Cup final in the same year.
That would suck.
And on the reverse of that, my final point I will make: if Raphael Varane and France win, he will have won 4 Champions League finals in 5 years and a World Cup, including 3 in a row. Same token, if Luka Modric wins with Croatia, you're talking about 3 straight Champions League finals and a World Cup final. Where do you go from there?
Like, you retire.
Like what is honestly, and at age 32, would anyone blame Luka Modric for just being like, yeah, all right, this is it. This
I made
it.
A ton of money. I won a ton of titles.
I saw this interview, and I retweeted it. If you scroll down my timeline, you can find it. And it's Luka Modric after the final, and he's kind of like talking about how England, all the press, they were reading it and how everybody underestimated them. And he said they should be more humble about, you know, Croatia after they've just beat England. And at the end, the announcer says, is reaching the World Cup final your greatest achievement? And he says, yeah, probably. And he's like, you know, I mean, winning it, if I was to win it, it would probably be one of the greatest things ever. And then you say one of, and then you start thinking, you're like, oh yeah, this guy has been like winning the Champions League every damn year. It's crazy to think, but Luka Modric is, if you were to zoom out, might end up being really the most successful player if he was to hang up his boots after winning the World Cup final.
And can I just throw this agree with Shahan take out there? I am all aboard the Luka Modric for Ballon d'Or train.
Oh yeah.
And it's not any disrespect to Messi, Ronaldo, or Neymar, but like, he's been so good for so long. In a year where he wins the Champions League final again and is the driving force, the catalyst, whatever buzzword you want to use for the World Cup champion, can we just give it to him? Because then in the future, you know, you can give it to Ronaldo and Messi however many more times you want to.
Like, I agree with you, but I have 2 words for you.
Uh-oh.
Wesley Schneider.
Yeah, so I was going to say this. In 2010, he won the Champions League final.
He won the treble.
And yeah, he did do
the treble with Inter.
He did treble, and then he takes
the Netherlands to the final.
And the ball I mentioned earlier, he's the one who provided. Should have been the match-winning ball.
Wasn't his best player in the World Cup.
It was not at all his fault that they lost. He was the best player on the planet that year, but that year was an anomaly because they split up and created the triple award, and that's why he got screwed out of it. If they had not split it up into traditional Ballon d'Or voting, he actually would have won the Ballon d'Or. But now it's back to what it used to be. So do not screw Luka Modric.
Don't screw him. Don't Schneider him.
Please.
Well, to be fair, the only other person that could potentially get the Ballon d'Or ahead of Modric, in my mind, and who should potentially get it, would be Kylian Mbappe if he shows out of the World Cup final. He's the only person where I would say, okay, if you do enough to get that golden ball at the World Cup final, and then you also go on... And, you know, if he wins the World Cup.
If he plays like he did against Argentina in this game.
Exactly.
I would agree with you.
The only, otherwise, forget Ronaldo and Messi for this year. I'm sorry.
Please.
Like, neither of them.
Please. We love both of them, but it's 10 years now, guys.
Yeah.
It's like, 10 years one of them's won it.
It's been a popularity contest. Let's get back to the actual football, right? And then the actual football says you should think about players like Fabio Cannavaro when he won it. After winning the World Cup. The World Cup matters and it means something. And in 2010, they kind of lost that a little bit. And 2014 was a little bit different because Germany didn't really have any crazy standout player. But right now, we have a standout player with France and we have a standout player with Croatia. And the World Cup means more than Champions League in World Cup years. So with that, we will say, enjoy the final. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. We clearly cannot stop talking about it. Try to wrap up this podcast about 10 times.
It's okay.
So for Alex Baker and Joey Galino, this has been Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening to all of our World Cup podcasts. We will have more content leading into it and afterwards at FC Yahoo or sports.yahoo.com/soccer is probably the easiest way to find it. On Facebook, you can like our page. It's FC Yahoo, same as it is on Twitter, at FC Yahoo. Also, you know, subscribe to this podcast. We will continue to make them going to next year as we have in the previous year. So if you're new to this, join us. Feel free to tweet out to us, all of us, or, you know, send us emails, angry or happy. We accept both.
But neutral, we do not accept.
We've received both.
If you're content with our podcast, we do not accept it.
Yeah. Well, do those people exist on the internet?
No, they don't really.
In any case, it's been a blast. So enjoy the final. Enjoy the third place game if you really want to, you know, want that random.
If you really love soccer, yeah.
If you really love soccer, it's like, and you're really looking forward to watching, Lord knows what lineups come out there. But once again, thanks for listening and enjoy the final. It'll be fun.